Welcome to ApplauseCast. ApplauseCast, in association with the San Jose Jazz Society, presents Stephen Mara and Bill Hedge in conversation with Jennifer Lee, jazz vocalist, about her work as a musician, the origins of her life in jazz, and the early and current influences in her music. We also hear her commentary as we take a jazz track from her latest CD, Jaywalkin'. Join us now from the offices of the San Jose Jazz Society with Stephen Mara and Bill Hedge in conversation with jazz vocalist Jennifer Lee.
My name is Jennifer Lee.
My name is Bill Hedge.
And I'm Steve Marr. Jennifer, tell us about your music and what you've been doing.
Well, what have I been doing? My music. I play kind of straight-ahead jazz and Brazilian music. And what I will be doing at the Santana Row concert...
Which is when?
Tuesday, July 18th. I will be performing at Santana Row with my trio, which consists of a piano player, David Udolph, and bass player, Butza Nicek, and percussionist, Raul Ramirez.
And that's at 6 o'clock?
That is at 6 o'clock.
We're going to give you some plugs.
Yeah, beautiful. Plugs. Okay. I love it. Good. We'll be playing some standards and some Brazilian music, and I play guitar and sing. I'm always in sort of a quandary when people ask me to tell them about my music, because, of course, when you play music, you do what you hear and what you feel, and it's hard to, you know, get far enough from it to really have an objective idea about what its characteristics are. Yeah. But the one thing I can tell you that for sure is that I'm kind of a minimalist. I'm not a big wall of sound musician. I like, I love listening to music that's really big like that. But for my own music, I like sparseness, space.
So does that mean that there are certain venues that you'd rather play? I mean, you'll play where you need to play, but are there certain venues, clubs, smaller, intimate places that you'd rather play?
Yeah, definitely. Intimate is the word. I like having the audience practically in my lap. Mm-hmm. I don't like being on a stage that's, 5-6 feet up, because I just feel too far from the audience. I mean, I do it, but I, my very strong preference is to be, if I'm raised, a foot or two, and have the audience, no more than 5 feet away.
I really got that sense from listening to the CDs that you gave us, a certain lightness and intimacy to your voice, a sort of a sweet vibrato.
Oh, thanks. Music is a lot about connection for me, and that's, I don't know if does that tie into the minimalist thing or not. I'm not sure, but for me, I guess that's the means by which it feels most natural to connect. And I mean, I connect with the audience, with my musicians that I'm working with, and with I don't know what something some great energy that flows through you when you're really present with the music.
I mean, sometimes it just seems, safer, better when people are physically closer.
To
where you are.
Yeah.
But let me. One of the questions I've been asking a lot of musicians lately, and they're veteran performers like you are, and who've done lots and lots of gigs.
Yeah.
Do you get nervous before you go on?
It depends upon the gig and the venue and the day and my mood and all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There have been times when I thought I should be nervous and I wasn't. And there have been times when there was absolutely no I was the house singer at the Ritz-Carlton for a bunch of years, 4 or 5 years. And there would be occasionally I'd have a night there on a stage that I've been on a million times. And it's very, it was not some... Well, it was sort of different every night, depending on what the audience
said.
But yeah, and every now and then I would feel like just this incredible, anxiety just descended upon me from out of nowhere. So it's strange. But there have been times when I've done concerts where in the beginning I was really nervous in the first, you know, during the first song, I would think, oh, this is bad. This is, oh, I am really, oh, this is how it's going to go.
It's going to be a long night.
It is going to be a long night. And, you know, on more than one occasion, I've had that feeling. And I was just absolutely certain that you know, I was just going to, you know, be in hell all night. And you know, after the first song, I just somehow melt into the music and have that incredibly ecstatic experience that you can have when you are, you know, making music and with an audience that's, you know, bringing you all this great energy. And so, yeah, it's
you know, I talked to some musicians the other day who are, of course, older than the three of us, but have been performing for, you know, close to 40 plus years.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask them individually, because I didn't want performance art them all the same question. Do you get nervous?
Yeah.
Because I knew in front of each other they would, of course, say no. But when I asked them, I cornered them individually.
Yeah.
To a person, all four of them said to me, with a look of astonishment, of course we do.
Yeah.
Of course we do. But once we're up there and it starts, we're okay.
Yeah.
So I guess it's sort of a common theme.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sort of along those lines, I actually was a closet singer for many years. I didn't start till a little later than a lot of people start, because I truly was terrified. I knew since I was 8 years old, when I got my first guitar, started learning how to play chords, and when I was all by myself, nobody was around, could hear me, I would sing, and it was the most joyful experience I had ever had, but I was absolutely terrified of doing it in front of anybody. It was just, I don't know, too precious or something. I'm not sure.
No, it's scary.
Yeah,
it
was. And,
scary.
And to have somebody tell you, I don't know, to put that thing out there that feels so personal, and I wouldn't do it for many, many years. I kind of put a baby toe in the water when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and then I pulled it right back out. And then I went to school and studied art. And then it wasn't until when I was 25, my dad died, and he was only 51. And that was sort of a wake-up call, like, you know, okay, I guess you don't really know how long you've got here, so you better do what you want to do. So that's when I started moving toward, you know, actually putting it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are your influences, do you think?
Well, definitely one significant influence, the Stan Getz recordings from the 60s, that when he was, you know, one of the artists that was introducing the bossa nova to Americans, and those recordings are what first got me into Brazilian music. And so, you know, since then, of course, I've learned a lot about, you know, a lot of different Brazilian artists that I listen to now, but I would say those were very, very influential, and that was what opened up my ears to that kind of music. And Mark Murphy is somebody who I am a huge, huge fan of, and I would say listening to his recordings really changed the way I listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
He opened my ears up to something completely new and different, and I'm having a hard time articulating exactly what it is. It's not just different songs or different ways of improvising or different, but a whole different way of a whole different kind of expression through music. I should probably think about how to articulate that more intelligibly.
But it was
because
obviously something that you resonated to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So he's been one of my influences, but you know, of course, Sarah Vaughan and Betty Carter. Those are some of the singers that, you know, I've listened a lot to. Carmen McRae. Diane Reeves.
So did you take lessons and that kind of progression?
No, unfortunately I didn't. And I developed nodules on my vocal cords because I was doing a lot wrong. So I now study with a wonderful teacher, Jane Sharp, in Berkeley. And I've studied with her for, I don't know, 5 years or something, maybe a little more than that. But I actually, now I just started singing because I thought, you know, I mean, I played piano, I play guitars, I know music, and I understand how, you know, I could write all my own charts and do all my own stuff. And, you know, well, we all talk, right? So, so I started singing and developed a lot of bad habits that created some problems for me. So unfortunately, I wish I had studied earlier, but...
But with the instrument, piano and guitar, yeah. Did you take lessons?
Yes. I started taking piano lessons when I was 5. My mom found a piano teacher for me. I think we got a piano when I was 4, and she said that I was just magnetically drawn to the thing, and she couldn't keep me away from it, so she thought, okay, I better jump on this and, you know, find her a teacher. And she looked and looked, and all the teachers were saying they wouldn't take students till they were at least 8 years old. And she finally found somebody who was willing. I mean, nowadays, a lot of teachers will take young students, but back then, most teachers weren't doing it. So she found someone who was willing to try, and I'm really grateful, you know, that she made that effort, because it's served me very well. You know, I mean, music is it's a language, and we all know that, you know, a child that's exposed to a different language when they're, you know, that young is much more likely to be able to, you know, learn to speak it fluently.
Yeah.
You know, with much greater ease than we learn when we're older. So, yeah. So I took piano lessons just for a few years. And when I got my guitar, that was all I wanted to do. So I got my guitar when I was 8, and, you know.
No, real grown up. You went from 5 to...
That's right. I'm done with this piano stuff.
More of this piano stuff. I just go to the guitar and walk around with this, right?
Exactly.
But again, it's just interesting, because Bill and I talk to a lot of musicians. There seems to be a progression. Most started with their parents' piano lessons.
Yeah.
And then they migrated, they suffered or whatever, went through that phase, and then found the instrument that sort of their calling, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, be a guitar or whatever, trumpet.
Yeah, yeah. But piano is such a great foundation for any musician. And, you know, I have little girls who, you know, see me sing and say they want to be singers. And the thing I always tell them is, learn to play the piano, because, you know, it's a great foundation for any musician, because of the way it's so much more visual than any other instrument. The way things are laid out, you can really get an understanding of music theory and how music fits together with via the keyboard, you know, more easily than, you know, through the valves of the trumpet or, you know, even, you know, than the fretboard of a guitar.
Of course, there are fewer valves.
Yeah.
It has to be simpler. There's only 3
exactly.
valves.
But especially for singers, I think, you know, it's... I'm really grateful that I have the skills that I have, because I never had to ask somebody else to write my charts. I never had to,
Where did you learn those skills? I mean, you said you majored in art, but...
Yeah, well, I did. I went back to playing the piano when I was in high school. I mean, I always played music. I always, you know, would mess around with stuff on the piano and I was, you know, playing my guitar. But I, in high school, I started taking lessons from a guy who taught me the basics of, like, major theory, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to, you know, voice chords and create my own arrangements of songs and stuff. And then I started playing in the high school jazz band. And then I went to Foothill College, and I played in the big band and in the little ensembles, and I accompanied singers. I was the frustrated singer. I wanted to be singing, but I was too shy. So I sat back there and played the piano for everybody.
People in the audience, right? You're okay.
Right. But yeah, so I had that experience playing. And so, yeah, that was how that came along. And So now I still accompany myself on some gigs, you know, on piano and some gigs on guitar, depending on the circumstance.
Yeah. Are you doing this? I sort of know the answers, but are you doing music full time?
Yes, I am. I'm teaching some, but it's all music. Mm-hmm. I teach piano privately, and then I also teach this class is called World Music for Babies and Toddlers with an organization called Play Songs in San Francisco and in Oakland. And then I perform, do, you know, some gigs that are kind of background music gigs and concerts and whatnot, mm-hmm. clubs, yeah.
What's the state of finding gigs to do in the Bay Area nowadays?
Well, you know, I hear a lot of musicians sort of bemoaning the state of affairs, but I have not been that actively out there pounding the pavement looking for gigs. I had a steady gig for the last couple of years, which is now ended last year, but at the Ledson Hotel. And prior to that, I had the steady gig at the Ritz. And then other stuff would just kind of come to me. It's been a lot of years since I've spent a lot of time really out there trying to get gigs. So frankly, I'm not gigging quite as much as I would like to be right now. But the stuff that I am doing, a lot of them are really more, you know, like concerts or featured performances as opposed to just background music things. But anyway, I just kind of feel like because I'm not out there pushing myself that much, I'm not all that aware of, you know, direct personal experience.
Yes,
right,
again,
now
some of the musicians that we work with, because I'm just kind of interested in that part of it as well. You know, some of the clubs have a 3-month rotation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the volume.
Oh yeah.
Of performers is so great. I mean, I would not have suspected that, but it's.
Oh yeah.
Three months before you get invited back.
Oh yeah, or more.
Or more.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I've see that in the places that really feature the music. You know.
Right. I think that's
so. Yeah,
that's the adjective. It's the places that you would want to play.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, to tell you the truth, I mean, I just love making music, and so even gigs where, I mean, definitely there's a lot to be said for having people who are actually listening to you, but I have had a great time at gigs where we are wallpaper, but I'm involved with the, last year I was doing these gigs up at the, what's it called? A casino up in Geyserville, River Rock, I believe it was,
yeah,
River
I know,
Rock Casino.
I know you're
talking about. And when I did the first gig there, I thought, but as I was driving up to it, I thought, oh, this is just going to be horrible. I mean, I hate casinos. I hate that environment, the noise, the smoke, and and I got up there and I was playing with a piano player and a bass player, and we just got into it, and we were in the middle of all the noise and the lights and the just horrible stuff. But once we started playing music, I was in the music. I just let it all fall away. And I mean, I can't always say that's the case. Certainly there are times when you're someplace where you've got some people being really, you know, talking loudly on their cell phones or that sort of thing that, you know, can really interfere mm-hmm. with what you're trying to put out there. But, you know.
I mean, I guess it's, like you said, it's background music, or you're there specifically to hear the music.
Right. Right.
You know, I talked to some musicians just the other day who were playing a gig down in where it was, Lake Havasu, or a gajillion miles from here.
Yeah.
And I said to these guys, you know, in today's economy, the amount of money gas wise it's gonna it's gonna cost you to get there, play for 2 days, drive back to San Francisco, hotel. I mean, even if you don't
Mm-hmm.
just the cost of gasoline.
Oh yeah.
And they still went, and you know, I thought about it and realized, I mean, they're aware of the money, but that's not why they were doing it.
Yeah.
The amount that it would cost to get there was an issue. They simply wanted to play in front of people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a really it's a strong incentive, you know, the because it is such an incredibly joyful thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But it is it's a challenge to make a living as a musician, you know, mm-hmm. and especially if you're, you know, trying to do it primarily performing. I mean, I still haven't figured out how in the world do people, like, you know, really make it when they're touring. And you know, I've just like added up the numbers, and it's sort of there's sort of a catch 22 in terms of getting certain types of gigs out of town. You know, the venue wants you to draw a crowd, but if you've never played in that town before, create that?
Right. You don't have a following outside of your own geography.
Exactly. Yeah.
A catch 22.
Right. And then, you know, you can use a publicist, but that costs an arm and a leg, and you know, you're going to be deep in the hole, mm-hmm. you know. But I've been really lucky. I have family down in San Diego, and I started performing down there at a place called Dizzy's, and I've, you know, slowly built a following down there. So at least I have, you know, two places. I got the Bay Area, and I've got San Diego. I can go to, or I can mm-hmm. draw a crowd. But you know, and I've played elsewhere, you know, on the West Coast, but I haven't really, really built a following anywhere else. So.
Well, that's wait till they hear this podcast. We'll get you out of the
beginning. All righty.
Get out of the cellar. So, Jennifer, you have three CDs, Jaywalkin', Quintessential, and I do not speak Portuguese.
Doce Brazil. Yeah, okay. Which is really sort of just a demo right now.
Was Quintessential Jaywalker first?
No, Quintessential was first. Okay. Yeah, and that's a compilation CD that there are five vocalists, and we each did three cuts on that CD. That's Shanna Carlson, Kathy Walkup, Jenna Mamina, and Charmin Duran. And when did we do that? 2001? I think that's right. Mm-hmm. 2001, something like that. And then Jaywalkin' I did in 2003. And that I actually recorded down in San Diego at Peter Sprague's studio. I actually worked with all San Diego musicians on that, with the exception of Rich Coons, who I flew down. Rich Coons is a piano player and accordion player, and he plays accordion on four or five cuts on my CD. And
one I noticed him on was I'm Old Fashioned.
Yeah,
and it almost sounded like if you could get Toots Tillman to play accordion, he would sound like that. It really was nice. It reminded me a lot of harmonica. It was just the delicate way he used it.
There's a really similar quality to the sound. It's a beautiful sound. I mean, I just love Rich's playing. I think he has such a unique voice. And I was really thrilled to have him on my recordings.
Question about Jaywalkin'.
Yeah.
In the beginning, there's sort of a soli between you and is it a saxophone? I think that's what it was.
Yes. You're talking about not the CD, but the song, the track.
The actual song.
Jaywalkin', right, which is, yeah, Peter Sprague's composition.
How did you record that? Did you rehearse it beforehand and just sang along with the sax, or did you do it afterwards?
Yeah, we actually wrote that out. That was not his solo that... Yeah.
So you rehearsed
it. We created it first. And then, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you did that a couple times on the album, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember the other song.
Yes. Oh, yeah, the other song is November in the Snow, mm-hmm. Which has a lyric that was written by Mark Murphy. Mm-hmm. So that was a song on one of his Kerouac albums. He did a couple of CDs, a couple of recordings that were tributes to Jack Kerouac, and that was on one of them, and I always loved that song. Oh,
well, so. What was on the Kerouac?
Well, one of them is called, one is called Bop for Kerouac, and one is called Kerouac Then and Now. And he intersperses some readings, Kerouac readings, with music, and they're phenomenal recordings, just brilliant. Yeah, and he also does what's that guy, Lord Buckley? Mm-hmm. You know, hipsters, flipsters, and finger popping daddies. That so it's great. Yeah.
You do. Speaking of sort of hipster, sort of Beat Generation kinds of stuff, you do this thing with Inchworm, which threw a little improvisation, then a little bit of rap on the end of it.
Yeah, well, it's sort of this spoken word thing I do in the middle of it, mm-hmm. and I had always been, for years, I had done this kind of funky version of Inchworm, and so when Peter and I got together to do the to arrange the songs for the CD, we were just messing around, and he was vamping on these two chords, and it just came to me. I just went, oh, I need to do some little rap with this, because I love the whole idea behind that lyric. It's a very simple and cute little lyric, but if you really listen to it, I mean, it's about, you know, wake up and smell the roses, and, you know, we all get so caught up in the details, and, you know, this little inchworm is just inching along, but he's not seeing the marigolds that he's that he is inching among. So I thought, boy, I could talk about that. So I just created that little rap.
Of the three CDs, which one is your favorite?
That's hard to say, because they're three totally different things, you know. I mean, Jaywalkin' is my only, you know, release as leader, Jennifer Lee, me putting me out there, whereas, you know, Quintessential was pieces of each of those five singers. Then the Doce Brazil, it's all Brazilian music. On Jaywalkin', of course, I have some standards and some Brazilian music, and that feels like it's more representative of who I am as a musician in the totality. But Doce Brazil is just all Brazilian. But, I mean, that's really, really special to me, too. I did that with Hugo Weinzinger and Claudio Bebiano. And we've done some performing together. And, you know, they're fabulous musicians. Hugo is also an incredible composer, a really prolific composer. And he is a recording engineer, was at his studio. And, you know, the hours that we put in on that together were really special to me, because I'm just crazy about those guys. I mean, they're part of my family, you know? And it's hard to say what's my favorite. I don't know. The Quintessential was a really, really special experience, too, because I got to hook up with those other singers and collaborate on this thing. And it was a really great experience, too. So each one is just special to me for a different reason.
I noticed that on Doce Brazil, on Telephone, you play guitar.
Oh, I play guitar on actually everything.
Everything.
Except I'm not playing on Borboleta, but I'm playing on all the other tunes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
On the tune Telephone,
yeah,
there is a duet of guitars. Did you play that with
Hugo?
With Hugo?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I play rhythm, and he does all the fancy stuff. Mm. I just lay down the rhythm. That's it. When I play with David and Butza and Raul, I play guitar as well as sing, even though we've got, you know, piano. But adding the guitar just adds sort of another nice texture. And I'm not doing any fancy soloing, or, you know, I'm not Joe Hotlicks on the guitar, but I can lay down the rhythm.
No, that sounds good. Shall we do the director's cut now?
Absolutely.
What's the origin of the song?
You know, I don't know that much. much about it, but I do know that it is from northeastern Brazil. It's a folk song, and I first heard it on a Marisa Monchi CD, and I just thought it was so sweet. So I translated the lyric and thought it was even sweeter after I translated the lyric and said, I gotta sing this song.
You can tell us something about the lyrics?
I will tell you and maybe something the name. About the lyrics. Yes, borboleta means butterfly. And so this is about a little butterfly who comes to visit everybody on Christmas Eve. And she is invited to join in the holiday festivities. And she says in response to the invitation, I am a butterfly, tiny and bewitched. I wander through the flowers looking for someone who wants me. Which makes absolutely no sense to me, but... But it's cute, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess she's, you know, kind of martyr thing going or something. But it's a sweet song. And actually, I use this song in my my classes. I teach world music for babies and toddlers and for play songs. And I have added a little English lyric to this and use it with the kids there.
Who else is playing?
Oh, this is Ugo Weinsinger on guitar and Claudio Bibiano on percussion. And Claudio plays this incredible instrument called the tantan, which is a metal drum, and he uses his hand to hit the end of it that has a skin over it, and then he uses a brush on the side of it.
Oh,
you can hear
so
that little. It's really,
it sounded like two instruments.
It did. I know. Yeah, it has that real bass sound. And it's a neat thing about that instrument is that, you know, we've done a lot of, Ugo and Claudio and I have done a lot of trio stuff without, you know, we don't have a bass player, but the tantan kind of provides a real feeling of having a bass.
Mm-hmm. So, is that a Brazilian
yes.
instrument?
Yes. Yeah. It's a really special sound.
So, Jennifer, give us your contact information, your website, etc.
Okay, my website is jennifer-lee.net. Apparently there are a lot of Jennifer Lees out there wanting to shout about what it is that they're doing. So by the time I got around to getting a website, jenniferlee.com was taken, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But so we came up with Jennifer, and that's a hyphen, not an underscore, but a hyphen in between mm-hmm. Jennifer and Lee. So jennifer-lee.net. Phone number is 510-547-6523.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining us, and was a great time.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time too.
If you'd like to leave us email regarding tonight's podcast, drop us a line at ontheair@applausecast.com. If you'd like to have ApplauseCast produce a podcast for you or your organization, email us at sales@applausecast.com or call us at 650-400-3929. This has been an ApplauseCast production. Thanks for listening.